Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone.
In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home.
As I said last week, nothing lasts forever. Holidays come to an end. So, as the happy, carefree days went by during our holiday in Taranto, the day of our departure loomed closer, and the question as to where we preferred to live, dove ti piace vivere di più, a Malta o a Taranto, would be asked. What a predicament! How was one to choose?
Mille violini suonati dal vento. I colori dell'arcobaleno vanno a fermare una pioggia d'argento, ma piove, piove sul nostro amor.
This here was all too good, but could it last? All things come to an end. And each year, it was with mixed feelings that we left Taranto to return to normality back home. Did we not have to get back to Dad, who had left 3 weeks before us and was looking forward to our return? Soon it would be time to begin our next class at school, to rejoin our school friends, and to again play with our friends in our yard or on the seafront at quiz. Leaving was sad. But then I would find Roy and have so much to tell him. There was also one other dear person waiting. This was Spe, our Speranza, who came twice weekly to help our mum with the housework, and we looked forward to her presence. We were very fond of her, and she of us. We had little presents to give her, small gifts, especially for her, and we looked forward to our evenings together, playing games on the camp bed. Afternoons on Thursdays, Spe would take us to the cinema, usually in Sliema, the Gaiety or the Alhambra, the Majestic or the Carlton. We watched Gulliver's Travels, together with the Liberta children and their housemaid. When we went home, this young village girl asked in wonderment how the giant had moved from the Valletta cinemas to the Sliema ones. And Franco Liberto, always a keen joker, explained that two trucks had been attached back to back for Gulliver to lie in, as they moved him from one town to the other.
Cha, cha, bambina, un bacio ancora, e poi per sempre.
Yes, leaving our dear ones in Taranto was sad. It was then that I began to hate railway stations. I do so to this very day. The train puffed and hissed out of the station, and the little group, with Nonno's white head in the midst, grew smaller and smaller. Each time it broke her heart and she burst into tears. I hated witnessing her despair, and young as I was, I shared it.
her slim hands pressed ours tight, until the slow movement of the train lulled us to sleep.
Vorrei trovare parole nuove, ma piove, piove sul nostro amore.
For hours and hours the slow lulling movement went on, tiring and exhausting. Southwards, with the blue sea on our left, past Metaponto, then past Torrente Puzzofeto, and back to Reggio di Calabria. Joyless now, across the Straits of Messina. But as we reached the coast of Sicilia, we had another treat to look forward to. In Siracusa we would be greeted by another loving face, so much like Nonna Tecla's. This was her brother, Peppino, who, as he lived in Sicily, had the duty of meeting us and of taking charge while we awaited the departure of the Star of Malta from the port of Syracuse. Every year he left his village of Vittoria and boarded a train to Siracusa, where he awaited our arrival, to spend a few hours with Anna, his favourite niece, our mother, and us, her children.
Montagne, montagne blu, voi conoscete la gioia di cieli limpidi e infiniti. Ed io
What joy and trepidation he waited, and how much love and affection between him and our mother. What excitement on our part. He would take us to a restaurant on the harbour, and the zuppa di pesce was just unforgettable. I seem to remember that it frequently rained during those evening walks, and this is quite possible because our return from Taranto was always a sad September affair. End of the summer, end of the holidays, and soon, back to school. Spoken gentleman. To me then, he seemed old, and this was maybe because he was my mother's uncle, or maybe because he had a strange gait by which he walked leaning forward as though walking on his toes, always about to topple over. He was kind and generous, and would buy the world for us, if the world were there for the buying. But all he could purchase were the pretty little Carrettino Siciliano, hand-painted, with fluffy feathers on the donkey's head, and the brass Rinaldo Paladino di Francia, wearing a tin helmet and a taffeta robe, brandishing his tin sword to fight off the infidel. Before taking us back to the ship, Sir Peppino led us into the quayside café to choose trays full of sweet-smelling paste and colourful almond pastries to bring back to our daddy in Malta. With our broken-hearted mother and these treasures held tight, we boarded the ship on our last lap home.
Ed io conosco te.
Trips were nightmares of seasickness as the ship danced on the waves.
It was a dance I never appreciated. All the zuppa de pesce went back uncontrollably into the sea. It was an uncomfortable, restless night. It is not easy to leave loved ones behind. But early in the morning, the Grand Harbor welcomed us with open arms, and our little ship stopped swaying and sailed smoothly into the calm waters beneath the majestic bastions. Every time, and it is so still today, the sight of our Grand Harbor left me breathless. Oh, the beauty of it, the grandeur that is in those walls, the elegance of the long, narrow city. The Grand Harbor was alive with British naval vessels. The Union Jack flew proudly over the castle at HMS St. Angelo. Far on the Lascaris Quay was the lone figure of our handsome young father waiting for us. In the blue water, below our ship's ladder, rows of colorful dicers waited to take the passengers and goods to the quay. There was quite some confusion, what with the ship's engines thudding, the boatsman's voice shouting orders, the church bells ringing in the distance, ringing out an Ave Maria, and banks from the fireworks celebrating a festa in an outlying village. Again, in the dicer ferrying us to the quay, the fear of her bimbe drowning took hold of our mother, and most terrifying of all was the experience of sharing our dicer with none other but Lena, a great Italian lady from Ischia, who was great both in build and in personality. She too had married a Maltese citizen, and this sole fact brought her and our mother together to share a friendship full of laughs and secrets. But no matter how fond she was of Lena, sharing a dicer with her was, for our mother, a terrifying experience. We trembled as the boat on Lena's side seemed to sink below water level, whilst high up on the other end sat our slim mummy clutching us to her two bambine. Daddy, waiting on the quay, seemed very, very far away. When at last we stood giddy and unsteady on the quay, there was still a bureaucratic obstacle to be overcome before we could hug our waiting dad. The customs officers had to check what treasures we had smuggled in from our holiday. So their intruding hands went through all the silly little plastic toy furniture we brought back for our doll's house. They inspected the colored pencil cases and the humble ware she had chosen for our home, like the colored set of Pyrex bowls. The first bought from standard department stores, in those which were the years of rebirth, when colored Pyrex and plastic started to gladden modern homes. Marina, 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 non devi lasciarmi mai più. Oh mia bella mora, no, non mi lasciare, non mi devi rovinare. To our daddy, to our quiz, to spare, to Roy, to our home freshly painted and spruced up by our dad in our absence. Every year while we were away, daddy would invariably whitewash all the house walls and paint our bedroom furniture, including the green table that changed according to his whim from brown to green to white.
Bella mora, no, no. non mi devi rovinare. Oh no, 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 no.
Once more, what a joy it was to open out our brand new stand-up pencil pouches and sit helping Mummy while patiently she covered our new school books with brown paper, neatly writing our names down on each with her special handwriting. School books were bought or borrowed, the piles getting bigger and heavier every year, the school satchel growing heavier and heavier. We proudly displayed our Italian exercise books with their bright, fancy covers, only to be forbidden to use them at school. At our school, all the little girls' copybooks had to be uniform. I found them dull and boring, and felt that those dull, bluish copybook covers suppressed the imagination, the natural desire of children to express themselves with colours and with designs. Every page was to begin with the acronym J.M.J. Jesus, Mary, Joseph. Saint Joseph was the most Catholic of Catholic schools. During the month of May, the best girl in the senior school would be chosen to crown the Virgin Mary amidst singing voices and the perfumes of the stephanotis that grew in the school courtyard at the feet of the Blessed Virgin. What does this mean? What does "blessed is the fruit of thy womb" mean? Nobody said, nobody explained. Our bodies were a mystery. The womb, a word not to be pronounced, and asking questions was absolutely forbidden. Yet, back in Bari, during my Italian holiday, at a stand at the Fiera del Levante, I had seen a black and white image of a fetus in the womb. Shocking. But now I knew the meaning. Blessed be the fruit. In fact, back in Italy towards the end of our holiday, we used to be invited to visit the Fiera del Levante by a very serious-looking gentleman who had a small wife who always wore very thick spectacles. These were Commendatore Corso and his wife, Donna Paolina. They lived next door to our palazzina in Via Anfiteatro, in the grandiose Palazzo d'Ayala. When my mother took us to visit the Corsos, up in their spacious marble-floored apartment, we climbed up the elegant marble staircase, feeling rather awestruck. We were told to behave and to say no grazie if we were asked if we wanted an ice cream. Now that was like training two little wild cubs, because we really wanted that ice cream served in a little metal bowl over a little paper doily and accompanied by petit four, delivered by an elegant waiter all the way from La Sem, Taranto's most exclusive café. Il commendatore, from what this curious child gathered while listening to adult conversation, was a wealthy and powerful man, and being invited by him to visit the Fiera del Levante was quite an honour. Besides, apart from my seeing there the first ever image of a fetus, Fiera del Levante also meant two beautiful dolls. My doll had dark brown eyes. I called her Sofia. At the Fiera del Levante in Bari, I also saw the first pair of stretch nylon stockings of my life. I remember walking by a stand and seeing a sales lady demonstrating how one could pull and stretch these stockings without their tearing apart. I was soon to become an avid consumer of this garment, and to find out that they did tear, and how they did. Early October, I went back to school with a heavy heart. Those first few days of the new school year had a feeling of hollowness. Leaving her back home alone saddened me, and at school, in the nuns' shady garden, by the statue of Emily de Villars, I stole the little violets to bring them home to her. There was all around a strange silence, hollow and forlorn, as I walked to and from school in the morning. The first season's rains washed away what was left of the summer holidays, and my calls to Roy from the bathroom window would go unheeded. I had seen you a few days before, in your St. Edward's school uniform, being led away for the next 3 months of boarding school. The sense of hollowness grew around me, but the school term took up all my energies. Now, as I look back, I realize that I was a good schoolgirl, neat enough and hard-working. I rushed to school every morning in my navy blue uniform, wearing the school necktie, carrying a heavy school case full of books and copybooks. I dragged my little sister by the hand, and several of her schoolmates came along. Mum's trusting me, as Pat is the older one. I worked hard and diligently, but could not help being very talkative, which cost me endless punishments, thousands of useless lines of writing, "I must not talk in class." I was taught everything about the pike in the British rivers, and nothing about the autumn passage of Lampooki shoals around the shores of my home island. I knew quite a bit about sheep rearing in the Cotswolds, but had no idea what the Cotswolds looked like, while I knew nothing about cotton harvesting, spinning and weaving in the Malta of days gone by. My sticking up for my more timid companions cost me many a torment. I remember being made to kneel on the floor, face down in a corner wall cupboard in Miss Mary's classroom. This, of course, taught me absolutely nothing. After, I spoke all the more and stuck up all the more for those who did not do so for themselves. The formation of my character must have been tough for my teachers, for I was rather strong-headed. When girls had to learn to be obedient and to curb their instincts, I insisted on having a mind of my own. I loved to act, so I was not given a part in the school play. I spoke out, so I was silenced. It did not look like I would have made a good nun, so I was left to be, to grow up into a teenager who would make a good grade in her GCE, give the school a good name, and be well prepared for a job at Barclays, the best thing that could happen to a young lady who was preparing for marriage, for the kitchen, and for motherhood. When I grew older, in the first classes of senior school,
I remember that I used to take refuge in a small room where I had discovered that there was a piano. I would ask to be excused and rushed to this room to play a tune on the piano and return to class feeling better because I had done something different and taken a break from the monotonous schoolwork. One morning, as I walked to school in my navy blue school uniform, wearing my hated clerk shoes and carrying my heavy school case, I stopped outside Brown's Pharmacy in Tinier Street. From the pharmacy window came a foreign voice on the rediffusion. It was the plea for help, the shout for freedom of the Hungarians, as the uprising in Budapest was being quashed by the Russian tanks. It was 1956, and the kids at school sang, "Are you hungry? Go to Hungary." And that was all we knew of that poor, martyred country that was to endure more than 40 years of a stifling regime. We knew little or nothing of Hungary, but in Makaiva Flats there lived an old Hungarian lady. She was plump and pink and had very few friends. I remember she had whole jars of lard, which she extracted from the meat as she cooked. She used it instead of butter, and we thought, ugh. There was another Hungarian lady who lived round the corner. This lady walked straight-backed and proud, with her beautiful blonde hair plaited around her head like a crown. Later, I was to find out that maybe these ladies had belonged to the army of lovely dancing ladies who had populated the Valletta dance halls in pre-war years. Their white skin, blonde hair and blue eyes had charmed many a young British lad into purchasing yet another lager, which had been produced in the Chisk Simmons Farsons brewery in Imrehel. Next week I'll be with you again to introduce more unusual characters, both human and animal. These characters that populated my childhood and walked by Dragut Street or Makaiva Street in the years when I was a child. Until then, goodbye.